Hello and welcome to another episode of Inside the Artist. My name is Rachel Corman, and today I'm very excited to have singer-songwriter, guitarist, producer, John Tirado with us.
Hey guys, hello.
Hey, welcome.
Hello Rachel, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm very good actually, it's a nice day out.
It is a really nice day out. Thanks for coming on. You have been such a support to me in starting this.
Support the artists.
You do support the artists, but also like you've been such a help as far as like what equipment to get, and you brought these headphones today for us to experiment with, and I really appreciate your support, so I'm excited to have you on.
Let's chat.
So you are originally from New Jersey.
Yeah.
And
born in downtown Jersey City.
When did you start playing music, and when did you pick up the guitar for the first time?
Right. Well, I did live in New York as well. I moved to New York, and I went to art school there, and I lived there for many, many, many years. And when I went to go to art school, I had quit this job, and I figured I'd take the summer to a couple months to get my act together before I went to art school. And I crashed my car. I didn't have a job, so I took the last bit of money that I could, and I bought a guitar. I figured I had a few months, maybe I could learn it. And I wound up learning like the first six chords that you could learn. And the first week I got into art school, I met two of the guys that moved up from Miami, and they lived together in this house on 8th Street in Manhattan. And he brought his drums. The other guy brought his bass. I was like, well, I got a guitar and I have a few songs. And we were like, let's start a band. And it was in art school the first year. So we met and we started a band, and we were called Vehicle. That was my first band. And we immediately started getting, not immediately, but like we rehearsed like for about a year, our seven or eight songs or whatever we had. and we started playing around. We played like CBGBs. So we played all the clubs that you could. And we also played like Columbia University. We were a very art school band. We were all new at playing and singing and whatever we were doing. So we were very art school-y. But that's when I started, you know, in art school.
When did you start writing your own stuff? Because I know you were in several different bands. You were in the Nash.
Mm-hmm. I had lots of different bands. The first band, Vehicle, was together for about 2.5-3 years. Yeah, about 3 years while we were in art school. And we started to get, you know, really good at better, and we had fans and all this kind of, as you do as an art student kid, and all your friends from art school. But we were both writing songs, me and the other guitar player. We would actually switch on bass and guitar, because he was like, I play guitar too, and I was like, I want to sing. He's like, I want to sing. I was like, we split the set in half. He had six songs and I had six songs.
You know? That's great. You guys were both able to do whatever you wanted
to participate in. Yeah, we both had a chance. Yeah, and I learned how to play bass because I had to, you know, I'll play bass on those, you know. And so then I you know, being in New York, there's lots of musicians around, and I had started this thing called the Circle Saturday Jam with my roommate or my flatmate, whatever, in my loft, and we had all the equipment in my loft in New York, and every Saturday we invited musicians around to jam with us just to have somebody to play with because we didn't know a lot of people, and after like months, it just became this big thing, and everybody was talking about it, everybody kept coming on Saturday we didn't even know. People started showing up, and like famous people, you know, the drummer from Bad Brains, or, you know, the trumpet player from, you know, Mephiscopheles, or, you know, all these people just started showing up, DJs, guys building theremins in the corner, you know.
So you've been jamming for a long time.
All along. Had a lot of different fruitions of bands. I had this one called Chrome, then King Corduroy, then like, you know, just all these, trying to get players, and in New York, it seems like it would be easy, but it's not, you know, it's about a chemistry thing. But jamming, you start to see who you'd like to play with, and who's kind of in your wheelhouse or your ballpark of what you do and what you like and who you get along with. But being in bands is about chemistry. Mm-hmm. It's like a relationship of any kind, you know.
So what happened to that band, your first band?
I tried to get it signed. I had all this interest back in the late 90s, I think it was. But actually in 95 and 96, I had been playing with Sammy Yaffa from the band Hanoi Rocks, which was a really big band in the 80s, and they were super famous. And I was actually started as a guitar tech for his band, which was called Demolition 23. And then he started asking me to come to the studio and jam with him because I play guitar. And then we said, hey, I'm going to start a band. My girlfriend is going to sing. Do you want to play guitar? And I was like, okay, Sammy Yaffa from Hanoi Rocks. You know, I was like, fine. And another guy playing drums, all Finnish, all from Finland. So I went this whole, like, part of my life with all the Finns. And then, I just started playing with different people. And then from that, I met, you know, because he knew everybody. We already automatically got recognition in different labels and, fanzines or whatever. So it was a turn. And he was very professional and had been playing for many years. And I had only been 3 or 4 years playing. So I was like watching him and learning a lot. And so then he decided one day, he's like, hey, man, we're going to go to Mallorca for a while to write. Do you want to come? And I was like, because we were about to get a deal with Sony in Japan.
How old were you then?
I think it was like 25. 26.
So here's an opportunity to go to Spain.
Yeah, I was like, you know what?
Play music.
Yeah,
and
I was like,
music.
I never, you know, when else am I going to be able to do that? So I took all my stuff and I moved to this house chalet. We're in like this little village in the middle of Mallorca called Montuiri. where the church was at the top of the hill, built in 1462 or something like that. Yeah, the village had maybe 1,200 people.
Wow. And you were there for like 15 years, right?
I was in Spain, not in that island village, but I was in Spain for 15 years. It was a lot of back and forth for about 9 years because I was like going to Spain, playing. Well, this band broke up after a month. We couldn't live together.
Okay.
And then I left.
So the chemistry kind of faded away.
Yeah. Well, I brought my stuff and it was this house. It was like the real world in some house in Spain, you know, and the four of us all of a sudden now live together. We were playing in a band. Now we're living. And it was like,
it was too much.
It was weird. You know, it got weird fast. And, but I decided to stay because I wanted to explore Europe and I didn't want to give up.
What did your family think about you moving to Spain?
You know, they figured it was just a phase, but you know, they had never even seen me play a show. They didn't really know that I was writing song, playing a band. They were like, oh, okay. Cause I remember my dad, when I bought my first guitar, he was like, yeah, great. You spent more money on something you're going to throw away. And I was like, no. I'm going to learn how to play them. I'm going to write songs. He was like, okay, whatever.
You know? So your parents are not in the musical?
No, my family. I had an uncle who played drums in a jazz band in the Korean War. my cousin wanted to sing. You know, really. But
you were the first one to really be like, this
I think
something
to make it
doing.
A career or go forward than just kind of a hobby. Mm-hmm. And at the latest, I mean, I started playing the guitar when I was 21. I bought a guitar. You know, I didn't even know musicians back then. So when I went to Spain, that was a turning point. I decided to kind of really delve in. But I had only been like a guitar player, not really a frontman singer. I had been busking in the subways and on the streets, playing covers with my acoustic and making a bit of cash here and there. I would go out every day and
play.
What
kind of covers did you do?
Everything from Pixies, Bowie, you know, all the stuff that I liked, you know. I would even do like The Cure. And I'd
nice,
walk by
nice.
Like, oh, wow, I love The Cure. And I'm like, thanks for the dollar. But yes, I cut my teeth that way because you're performing and nobody's paying attention, but you got to give it. It's a different animal, you know, than playing in a stage and everybody knows your stuff or whatever. It's you really low.
Did you get a good response when you were busking?
I did,
you are really talented and I'm sure people are gravitated to your voice when they hear you.
No, I definitely noticed that I made money, you know. It was like people would come and drop $5 or a dollar or, you know. When I was in Spain, I bust a lot and I would make good money there. I would do it all day because it was like, why not? I'm going to rehearse at home or rehearse out on the street and make cash, you know. And that's how I survived for a while. So yeah, I was in Spain and then it didn't work out with that band, so I decided to stay. And what happened was I had got a few jobs since I knew people from Finland. So I got a job actually putting the equipment together for sound for a company in Finland. So I went there. I thought it was just going to be like a month for the summer. I wound up there for like months and months stuck in Helsinki because I kept using my money to go party in like Tallinn and Russia, like getting on the hydrofoil, like, woo, you know, just too much fun. And but I wound up staying and learning a lot of stuff there. And then when I came back, I had made a demo for myself. And then that demo I sent around, and the long story short is I got a deal in Spain. But I didn't know it. They sent me a letter. It was before the cell phone thing. So they were putting letters in my mailbox, and I didn't have a key for my mailbox. I didn't bother checking. I figured nobody knew my mail address. But the people who wanted me had gotten my address, and they were like sending offers in the mail, and I didn't know.
How'd they get your address?
Because I signed the paperwork.
It was on the paperwork.
But I didn't have any phone. I didn't have any of that stuff. So so basically one day I saw something sticking out of the mailbox and I was like, I opened it. I told my buddy who was my roommate and my drummer. I was like, man, they want us. And he was like, what are we going to do now? We don't have a band. I was like, I know. I don't know what to do. So I just went like randomly around like, hey, you play bass. You want to play with me?
So this is a new roommate. This was not somebody you were in the band
No,
previously.
I was. Yeah, he was the drummer from the other band
still,
that we moved.
So
yeah, we stuck together. Yeah, we
got
both got kicked
him.
Out of the band.
Oh, you both did. And then you guys just decided to start
your own. He got into a fight with them
thing.
And then it was like, and then I was like, I'm on his side, I guess. Snake it out too. You know, like,
so then what's his name?
Malka. That was Malka Palmio.
And you guys started finished. Playing music together?
We had, in New York, we had done stuff. He actually started from a sound guy and helping me out in New York, and then when he came with me, he was a really great drummer. He was the drum tech for the band that I was the guitar tech for. So
got it.
But anyhow, so long story short, I got my first record deal, and I had to go back to Spain in New York because I had all my tickets to go back, and I had to do some stuff to take care of my apartment because I still had it in New York.
I was gonna ask you, so you still had your apartment in New York?
I still had it. Yeah, I was subletting it or paying everything off and then going away 5-6.
Wow.
It was kind of a juggle and a skip and a dance to do it, but I figured it out for 9 years.
Wow.
But so yeah, we went back and I just like sold stuff like my amps or whatever. I was like, I gotta go back, you know, I got a record deal, and then I had to write more songs because I only had 3-song demo. I was like, yeah, I got plenty of songs. No, I don't have any songs. So I like ran home and had like the 4-track. It was just like next song. Like,
and you wrote these when you went back to New York?
I wrote a bunch of songs, yeah, when I went there. And then when I sent them to, you know, some of the guys that I was wanting to play with so they could learn it, whatever. But I didn't have anybody really. So when I got back, you know, I went to check out different studios because now I had a budget, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked I thought it was a really good one. And the producer that I picked was actually sort of a rival because he was trying to get this deal or whatever as well. And he was a little upset with me that I got the deal and not him. But in the end, we became really good friends because he liked my music when he produced me.
Great.
Yeah, it was like this hate. And then all of a sudden, we just like, oh, man, I love you. You're a great guitar player. You're so good. And he was like, I think you're a really great songwriter. I was like, thanks, man. Let's make the record, you know? So we went from like hating each other to like loving each other. We're like still friends now.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That's Pablo. And he was actually half Finnish and half Spanish. He was from, his mom was from Finland and his dad was a Mallorquin Spanish guy.
I love that. And it's like the music united you guys.
Yeah, yeah. We just like, he's like, you know what? Yeah, actually, I really like your music. I'm like, man, you're great. So come on, let's just do it.
Where do you get inspiration for your writing?
That's a good question. It's like, I think it's from everywhere. Mostly it's from myself getting up and just kind of bashing out on the guitar. Like we're doing here, I would get set up the mic and just start humming and playing and feeling it, you know? So just to get it pushing, you know, it's like if you're going to write, you have that blank page, or if you're going to paint, you have the blank canvas. You got to just kind of push into it. But a lot of times I'll hear somebody say something and I'll go, oh, that's interesting that they said that, or how, what it meant. I don't know the rest of the context, but I might make a song or an idea of that just one phrase. And I go, oh, that takes me to another place. And then I'll stop playing something one day and subconsciously I won't even know that, you know, because when we do the jams, I just free flow lyrics all the time.
Yeah.
And it comes from a well.
That's so hard to do. I don't know how you do that.
It's just from, I'm always thinking, I have a very active mind. As you know, I'm very energetic and coffee laden.
Are there certain things that are happening in your life at the time that you're thinking about that you want to write about? Is it things from your past? Is it things from current events going on? Or I guess maybe both.
I think it's a little mixture of everything. And also I like to take, I guess, what they call poetic license. I don't want to always sing everything exactly how I mean it. Because, you know, sometimes I'm talking about something that I don't want you to really... Also, I like the idea that people absorb lyrics and music and they have an interpretation.
Make it a little ambiguous for the listeners?
In a sense, because it's like, it's fun for me to see when somebody says, oh my God, I love this song. It reminds me of that. And I go, wow, I had nothing to do with it. That's great. You know, like that's what music... And music is a communication. You know, it's like a way to make people feel and think, just like art, any art, you know, paintings, writing, you read a book. And it makes you feel like you understand that and that's how you want to live your life. Or, you know, I mean, that's why music is so powerful. And living in Europe, I learned that the bond I had with anybody, whether we spoke the same language or had no way of communicating, we would say something about a band or some music we like. And it was like, we were dancing and laughing. And that's it. You know, you can get by. And that's the community. The community is the music and the arts. So, yeah.
And when you lived in Spain, what was the language barrier like? Was that challenging or how did you deal with that?
Well, for sure, I would say that I went there with the attitude of knowing that I would need to learn Spanish better. But the only problem is when I landed in that village called Monturiri, they only spoke Mallorquin, which is a dialect of, it's Catalan, but it's in this very small village, which is a whole other language. And I never even heard it before. So the first day I went to the cafe, there was like these four old guys with their sweaters and their hats and the cigarettes and the guy behind the cleaning and they were speaking another. I was like, wow, what is that? I thought it was Spain. And I was like, I went back to the house and the guy was like, are we in Spain?
Did you know any Spanish before?
I mean, yeah, I studied in high school. My dad is half Puerto Rican, he's mixed, but he never spoke it to me in the house. But I heard it here and there. Yeah, my brothers speak it in Puerto Rico. Half brothers and sisters.
So you were forced to learn it. I mean, I imagine you had a lot of interviews. You wanted to learn
Tons of, it was really hard. The first 6 to 8, it took me about 8 months to really break through and feel like I could talk Spanish.
Songs are in English.
Yeah, yeah. But I did tons of interviews. But what I did was, like, I made it a point not to make any American friends or anybody that wanted to speak English with me for the first 6 months.
To learn the language.
And I would watch The Simpsons and Married with Children overdubbed in Spanish on a little TV. And I learned that. Situational comedy. You just know it's going to happen. And everything becomes clear when you hear those words. And they use a lot of simple, you know, the writing is not so prolific. But
right.
So you understand the situation, situational comedy.
The Simpsons and Married with Children.
That's how I learned. Yeah, pretty much. But it was good because I didn't speak at parties. I was standing with my glass like, hola, me llamo John. Uh-huh. You know, me llamo John. But after a while, I was parroting. Like, anytime somebody would say something, I would repeat it, and they would all laugh. And they're like, oh, she said that pretty good.
Yeah. Well, so after that's a while, I got the accent. That's how you have to practice it.
Yeah.
And what kept you living in Spain so long?
I think at first it was just the sheer, like, the chutzpah of not going back and say I failed because the band broke up. I didn't want to go back and say, oh, yeah, it didn't work out, and I'm back. Blah, blah, blah. No, I was like, whatever. Next. And I really wanted to make something of that go. You know, I didn't really, like... And I had, at the time, there was, like... ST Travels, which gave you tickets super cheap as a student, and I still on student stuff, you know. So it was like $300 for the year. I could keep changing it for like $20 every time I wanted to change it. So I had a ticket open to come back anytime as long as I changed it every, you know, 3 months.
An airline ticket, you're saying? You had like a student deal?
I did, yeah. Back then, they had ST Travel, did this deal. And I did it for like 3 years in a row. I kept coming back and forth on those ST Travel things.
Do they still do that?
Nah, that ended a while ago.
I could say I'm still a student.
Yeah, I still do. Like John.
And you had a bunch of successful records.
Yeah, definitely. I did my thing. I mean, a 15-year run for a band.
Was it with the same company that signed you initially?
No, I went through three different record deals, and I had like a couple, like basically a couple different publishing type deals. The first record label I went with, actually, as a side note, in October is the 20th anniversary of my first album. The first album is called The Last Cigarette, and it's going to be rerun in vinyl in Europe. They're going to do like a run. I don't know how many, but they're going to rerun it in vinyl, which is kind of
interesting. Congratulations. Yeah. That's exciting.
It's good news. It was like, wow, because the label called me up. They were writing me a couple months ago, and they were like, hey, 20th anniversary is coming up. 20th anniversary.
Did you know it's been 20 years?
I don't think about that.
Yeah.
Feels like five, really. He's like, hey, can I do a vinyl run? And I was like, yeah, of course. And then he goes, do you want to come back and tour the first album? Meaning play the songs. Replay it. So I got in touch with the band members, the latest band members, because I've been going back every year once or twice to do some shows.
Yeah.
Like a little festival here or, you know, gig there. Because people still kind of want to hear that band. There's a lot of still like bubbling sensations of like, hey, why don't you guys get back together and do another? And we talked about it. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, when this thing, the 20th year of the first album came up, and the guy was like, hey, man, I can get some shows, so if you want to do the vinyl release, I'll, you know, set up a bit of a tour, and you guys can play around. And I was like, that sounds great, you know.
So you think you're going to go back for that?
Oh, no, in October. It's already
it's done.
Already
it's happening.
Started. Yeah, it's already in March. It's
That's
marching.
Great.
Yeah, it's four, yeah. And I'm sitting trying to learn the first album songs.
Yeah, it's like it's coming back to you.
Yeah, I'm like, wow, I haven't played that song so long.
Is it interesting to see the trajectory of you as a writer and how your writing's maybe evolved from from 20 years ago to now?
Yeah. I mean, that first album was a lot of guts and blood, and, you know, it was just like I was literally living on the street. You know, I was like, had no place to stay. I was going couch to couch. I was even sleeping on the beach. Wow. You know, I was like, it was rough because I didn't know where to go. I couldn't get an apartment because I didn't have any paperwork in Spain. And even though I was like starting to get like recognized as a musician and a songwriter and actually going out to play around Spain, like I'd get on a plane with the band and we take a boat, like a van full of stuff, and we'd play all over, and then I'd come back and I'd have nowhere to stay. I'd come back, I'd be calling people on the way back from tour, be like, hey, can I stay on your couch for like 3 days? And like, oh yeah, no worries, going. And I had my equipment like stuffed in somebody's basement, you know, I didn't have anything like in one place. And
what drove you to keep pursuing this and knowing this is what you want to do despite all those challenges?
I don't know. I just really felt like I had every time I made it like a goal every year to kind of make a small goal. Like, you know, by the end of the year, I want to play that festival that I heard about that's really good. Or I want to really get, you know, 10 more songs. And I made all these like little goals that I knew I could get to in a way. So it perpetually kept me moving forward. But I would always say to myself, if it's not, be honest with yourself, John, if you feel like nobody's paying attention or something's not working out, mm-hmm. you know, people aren't responding the way they should in this kind of industry, you should really think about it and make moves. So back in 2010 and 9, I had released my first solo album, which was called Slow Motion Party. And it was a very more adult thing. You know, had like the piano player from the Platters. I had the saxophone player from Joe Cocker. I actually opened up for Joe Cocker. I had a 9-piece band, you know, had like the violoncello, had the violin player, the backing vocalist, the bass, you know, I had all these players, and I was orchestrating this whole thing, and I did this album, and it's very more adult, and it's about me and my acoustic as like troubadour, you know, mm-hmm. kind of singer rather than the band, rock band.
Yeah.
And I did well for a little while with that. I toured for almost 2 years, but then, you know, the economy went really bad in Europe, especially in Spain. Phones started ringing less. There's, you know, less opportunities. They want you to come, but they got to pay you less this year because of this and that. And I was like, that's the writing on the wall. So that's when friends of mine were like, man, come to L.A. We can get you work here. You know, you're great. You could do this and that. I was like, all right, let me give it a shot, you know. And that's what kind of turned it.
So you moved here, you said, about 5 years ago.
Four. Yeah, well, about yeah, at the very, very end of 2011, I got a gig singing in Adam Sandler's band.
What?
Yeah.
What were you singing? My the buddy, Hanukkah song?
No, yeah, right. Backing vocals.
He's backing vocals
no,
for
no,
the Hanukkah
he,
song.
No, he has a band, which is an incredible band.
Really? What kind of music?
Well, we do covers. Well, we did covers. Uh-huh. I was in it when. But he loves rock. He's really a good guitar player, actually. And, you know, I've jammed with him. He plays electric guitar like a mother. He's really good.
Nice.
But anyhow, so he did this, you know, he has a Sony Pictures party every year for his company and stuff. So my buddy was his personal chef, and my buddy came to say, hey, man, one day he called me. I'm in Spain. We're on Skype. And he goes, man, Adam just came to me and said he doesn't like this guy who did a version of It Must Be Love. Must be love, love, love. But, you know, anyhow, he just for this movie, and he doesn't like it. He goes, here's your opportunity. He goes, go do a version of it. Send it to me and I'll play it for him. So I went in my other room like the same night and did a version, acoustic version of Must Be Love.
Uh-huh.
Sent it to him via email. And the next Monday, he like played it for Adam. And Adam was like, wow, this guy's really good. Who is he? And he's like, oh, he's my buddy John. You know, he's coming to LA soon.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, well, tell him if he comes, he could sing in the band. We have the jam band.
Amazing.
And he goes, come here. He's like, come here now. So I came and it took me straight to Adam. He's like, man, I love your stuff. You're great. Do you want to sing in the band? I was like, okay.
Great.
So we started rehearsing in his house and he has the all-star band. He has like the drummer from the band Boston, the keyboard player from ELO, you know, Wadi Wattel on guitar and like 13-piece band, you know, they've been playing together like 6 years. But they do all covers. But when they do the covers, they invite the person who actually wrote the, like, we're like, let's do some Blonde.
Oh, that's nerve-wracking. you performed the song for that band.
Yeah, no. I sang with Debbie Harry. I sang with the guys from Alice in Chains.
Wow.
Jackson Brown. Tom Morello came jam. Like,
wow.
Like, he just, you know, they have a, it's Sony Pictures.
Right, right.
Like, hey, you want to jam? They're like, yeah, of course.
Totally, yeah, why not?
Yeah. So that's where I kind of came into here.
And that's kind of how you got your musical start in L.A.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not going to say it ended there or started really big there. It was like a world. It's like, wow, you know, it's like.
And you saw yourself living here after that.
I kind of felt like there's probably some opportunities, you know, if this is how it's going
to
be.
Do you still miss New York?
I do, but not for the same reasons I used to when I was younger, because it's not that anymore. It's just not the New York I grew up in, you know.
Do you think the music industry is moving more towards LA? In America speaking, is the foundation?
I don't even think it's that. I think just the music industry is moving wherever the internet is. You have to really be more savvy that way than anything. Mm-hmm. And that's another reason why I had to change and move, because I wasn't growing anymore. I was kind of in a good place there in Spain, mm-hmm. and you know, I have settled. People liked me. I didn't have to fight as much in certain areas. But when things became a fight, I was realizing that it's not that easy anymore to fight the industry in Europe the way it was when I first started. So I was like, I got to change. I have to motivate. I have to get my swagger on. I got to, you know, you got to get your killer instincts to survive in that industry. And it wasn't in Spain anymore. I was too relaxed, you know. So
what changed in the industry?
Well, you know, it becomes, well, first of all, money. So when there's less money, people don't just jump on opportunities like they used to. They give less chance of things they don't see. They don't want development. They want it ready, packaged. We can sell that. Thank you. Go back to where you came from. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, not that that has ever changed now, but I think that, you know, the way it was over there, I think I had done what it was I could do. And I wasn't going to do more because I was there. But when I went away... Everybody was like, where's John? And I'm like, now you're asking for me. And I was like, and I do go back and I do it. And that's how it saved it almost, because it was not going to survive if I stayed. But it also helped me grow.
It sounds like maybe you needed a new push.
Oh, no, I did.
Things were all working out for you in Spain.
No,
you know, you're
I need
well
to get
known.
The hustle. I need to get the hustle back. And in New York, I was all hustle.
Mm-hmm.
Hustle,
and then
hustle.
Your dream kind of came true, essentially, in Spain. Your dream came true. Yeah. All you had albums, you were known, you were
five
touring.
Five albums, toured around all the time, made plenty of money, did
and
my
then,
thing.
And now you're
house.
Like, now what's next? You have this new opportunity in LA, so now it sounds like you needed a new push to start the next journey in your career.
And it wasn't like I could like say, oh, well, now I'm going to write. I mean, I had done a few commercial things, like commercial music, whatever, for commercials and for people's movies. But it wasn't going to blow up, you know, people from L.A. weren't going to come looking for me over in Spain in my house, you know, and with my coffee and my couch, you know. So I had to go out and move, you know, like anybody else. So I needed to just learn that lesson, and I learned it, and here I am, and we're all hustling.
So what are you hustling for now in L.A.?
You know what? I have a lot of things going on that I really don't want to talk about too much at the moment. But, you know, when they happen, we can talk again.
Cool.
But, you know, I feel like here I'm able to explore more than one idea. Whereas in Spain, my idea was that band and I actually wrote always for that band. It was in my mind. So now I'm like, I want to write for that. I want to write for this. You get a different perspective and it's more open, at least I feel. And there's a lot of things going on. And I've got a few, you know, pots on the stove, if you want to say.
That's good. Well, it sounds like you're not stifled, that you are involved in so many things. And so it's exciting for you and it's pushing you. And that's what you wanted.
The funny thing is, like in Spain, I had this 5-bedroom, 2-bath house that I turned into my home and studio. Like, one room had the drums, the other room had the, you know, bass amp, I had the guitar amp in my food closet, you know, like the whole place was cables and, you know, pianos and drums and my control room. And it was every day making music. When I came here, I had nothing. I had an acoustic. I didn't have a laptop. I had no musical equipment. I had a mic, you know, but nothing to plug it into.
So you left all your equipment in Spain. You had to start.
Yeah, and actually dissipated. Went to everybody else. I wasn't there. But me coming here and having to build that back up again gave me a new appreciation for what I actually needed to have and what I can really use. And I've learned different things about the stuff I do have now that have helped me move forward. It's always a positive thing.
Always learning, always growing.
Yeah. And I like to share that with people too. I mean, maybe my experience is not the be all end all, but if I go, oh, that person is having a problem that I had just the last year and I made it.
I'll tell you.
So, you know, because we're all in that same struggle trying to get past that little learning curve of whatever it might be, you know.
Well, you've been teaching me about mics and
I love microphones
and condenser mics. And what did you ask me? You're like, Rachel, do you have a
just whatever question? I'm
whatever,
like,
blah, blah. I'm like, I don't know.
You're
John.
Like, yes, no, I don't. What are you talking about?
I'm like, will you just come over and look at my shit? Because I have no idea.
I'm like, I'm a little bit of an equipment nerd, you know. Like, I mean, not really. Some people I know, lots of people other know more than me, but
yeah,
I've had my experience with stuff that I really like the way it sounds, and I want to get my hands on it again. Or
well, I want to get a pair of these headphones that you brought over. What are these?
They're AKGs.
AKGs.
Yeah.
Can I get a sponsorship for the podcast?
Hello, AKG.
Hi, AKG. I'm really enjoying your headphones
These
John
are great,
supplied today.
Yeah, these are great studio headphones. They're super quiet and comfortable.
They're super all day
with them on. I mix a lot with them. I go back and forth from the speakers to this to get like the variance space in the instruments. And it's comfortable. I don't feel at the end of the day like my head's ringing or my ears hurt.
Yeah. Like, I can hear myself back as we're doing
natural,
this, but it's not, like, super loud.
It's
and
it's comfortable.
Yeah, it's rad. And you have your own studio in L.A. as well.
I do now have a home studio.
Home studio. That's
got, you know, I got all the little bits I need to get whatever I need done.
Do you record for yourself, or do you work with other people in your studio?
I've been working with some people here and there. Mostly I'm just working on some of the tracks I'm trying to put together for the projects I'm working on. But I did recently was asked by a fan of mine who's a promoter and owns a label in Spain. He does this thing where he makes albums for his label to promote. And his idea was, I'm going to get all the musicians that I like and I'm going to have them each secretly do a cover of each other's songs. So somebody did a cover of my song. I don't know who, one of his favorite bands.
Wow.
And I did a cover of another band's song. They don't know I did it. And then he puts out the album and it has all of our songs, versions of each other's songs on the album. And like
that's
all,
so
we're
dope.
All surprised. We get like, oh, this guy did my song, and that's great, you know, version. And you could go find the original version. And
where can people find that?
It'll be online or on sale. It's
okay.
With Pecan Pie Records, and really nice guy, Juan. And so he called me up months ago, and I was just always like, at the moment, like looking for work. I couldn't like take the time to sit and really concentrate. And also, he sent me some songs I wasn't really totally inspired by. And then he sent me another bunch of songs to choose from, and I found one and I was like, okay, I like the melody in there, because I'm about melody in songs. And I heard that melody, I was like, you know what, I think I could do something with that melody and I'll figure the rest out from there.
Cool.
And I did. I took the song and flipped it on its back like a turtle, just like legs going everywhere. I just turned it into another kind of song.
That's so awesome. So you consider yourself a producer as well as a singer-songwriter?
I say that, I mean, because I do I have to produce everything, I have to record, so I've gotten a lot better at recording. You know, I haven't won any. Actually, you know, there are a couple of bands in Spain that I actually reproduced them and they've won awards.
Oh, wow.
I've gotten recognition and gone on to do other stuff because of that recording. But I'm not like an award-winning producer. But I control my space well and I get really good sounds and, you know, I know how to do it. I've been doing it for years. And
have you had to learn new programs as technology
yes.
is evolving and changing?
Yeah, and that's the other thing. I always feel like I'm not fully in the curve of everything because there's so many things I always go, I never heard what? And like, I need to get that now. Like, but you know, everything I have, I use really well. I control it really well, and I get good sounds. I was thinking about taking classes for mastering, which is the final step of recording for anything. For you know, it's like the cherry on top of the sundae, and it's the last. You know, it's a very specific kind of, you know, you have to have super ears, and I'm kind of into that. So I think one day when I get enough money, I want to go to school and take the 6 to 8 months, whatever it is, course of learning how to master.
You're always wanting to learn and
oh, yeah.
grow. It's
yeah.
awesome.
Yeah.
There's no, like, stopping point for you. It just seems like you always, like, have another goal that you want to achieve or another thing you want to learn.
I think, yeah, I try to have that. Oh, even if, I don't like to say things I'm not going to do or talk over what, you know, talk too much and then not produce. Meaning don't do what you say.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel like I say it because it's something I really feel inside. I just know I don't have the bank account for it at the moment. It's expensive.
Right.
It's like 40 grand or something.
Oh,
like
I'm
that.
Sure.
But I want to go to the best one. You know, I want to go
course.
There and, like, really get into it. Because then I need money, like, to have food made for me because I'll just be, like, in it for, like,
yeah.
8 months not doing anything but studying because I'll get that engrossed.
Yeah.
So I pay rent
so
for 8 months.
About
yeah.
It.
And I won't be able to work, really, another job. So, I want to do that. But, there's so many things I want to do. And I think I feel much more alive now than ever. I feel really energetic, and I've been meeting really great people like yourself, and that are in that same moment where they're like really just at the cusp of really getting where they want to be. And even doing it on this level is amazing because it's getting done, you know?
It's just being around creatives and everyone supporting one another just to go after what they want to be doing.
And that's one thing about, I think we should talk about is the scene in like Laurel Canyon or just the jam scene here that we've kind of come into that I think is really important.
So John and I met in Laurel Canyon, which is a really great community here in LA. I mean, the history and I mean, all the big bands from like the 70s all lived in Laurel Canyon.
Made the big splash back then, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I was talking about it with a friend this morning, actually. I feel like there's been a rebirth and that those iconic musicians have kind of been rebirthed now in Laurel Canyon. I think that the people that we know and that we're involved in these jams that we have.
Oh no, it's there.
There's such raw new talent that's occurring. And it's really special that this group of people have come together and
absolutely
support one another. And it's not even just musicians. I mean, there's writers, there's actors, there's, you know, filmmakers. It's an eclectic group of artists. It is really special. And yeah, if you want to elaborate more on that.
I think, it's, you know what it is like, I realized that, if you say it's like that resurgence of that creativity of the 70s. In the 70s, those bands had hits, you know, the Crosby, Stills, Nash, or, you know, they had their hits and made a point of Laurel Canyon being like the Seattle of the 70s, you know. Right now, there's so much talent, but there's not the bigger recognition because there's not any big record that has come out as Laurel Canyon per se. But man, if somebody really wants to get in there and come to those jams and see what's going on, there's a lot of great stuff happening.
A lot of talent.
Really good people. Mm-hmm. I think just the way the life of the industry is and the status of the commercial side of it just doesn't recognize that as much. It's not even about that kind of stuff anymore. But the people there or the people that come to the jams understand that it is about that. That has never stopped. And you say there's talent from all writing, movie industry, but it's because there's a bad moment for all that now. This doesn't really work out for everybody. But all those people have so much talent. They're still in there to win it, fighting through it. And there's a lot of like bubbling energy and man, I don't know. I don't know what needs to be turned, what key, because if all those people got together and did something, it would be absolutely incredible.
Well, I think we are on a trajectory of doing that. I think these jams are happening more frequently. You know, more people are having them. And, and I mean, I keep meeting new people at everyone I go to. There's new people. And it's, I like how you said there's like something needs
to turn.
There's
one little twist, one little tuning knob.
Something needs to, you know, I don't know if we need to do a documentary on it. I don't know if we need to do some sort of...
That's what I'm kind of leaning at.
You know?
Well, like, I tried to do... Remember when I did the Neil Young thing? Were you there for that?
Yes. Yeah. I wasn't there for it, but I saw it.
I was and I tried to... At first, I was just, again, asked... There was a big Neil Young festival in Spain, and they
that
asked me to...
you couldn't make, right?
I couldn't make it, but they really wanted me to participate. They said, please do a couple songs acoustically. And I said, well, let me, you know... I said, wow. I said, like you said, it's like, there's such a weird thing going on in Laurel Canyon. It has a history, but people don't know what's going on now, the talent. So I said, let me just kind of bridge those two by doing this little show and then having it at the place where everybody comes together for meet for the Neil Young music to show that people across the world from Spain are loving music just like you guys. Because that video, and then it turned into a doc. I said to my wife, I said, Iskra, because she was like, what else you want to do? I was like, because it seemed like it was...
You showed kind of the history of Laurel Canyon.
I decided
you showed
to,
the map
after,
and
yeah,
you showed
afterwards.
Where Jim
I said,
Morrison's
you know, let me just go a little
bit
further here and just give a little speech about what happened in my experience here.
I think that was a great first step, and I think we maybe need to expand on that a little bit more.
I think so as well, and we could talk more about that later.
Yeah.
Because I think it's one of those things where you can go deeper into the little pockets and pull gems out. You know, we got to dig in there. But yeah, that was the idea. Kind of like, you know what? There is a bridge, and it's the music. I forgot. I was like, yeah, in Spain, if I didn't understand somebody's language, I just talk about bands, and we were talking. We were in the bar, we're having a drink, and we were talking about music. But our language isn't there, but the music, oh, yeah, that band, you know?
Totally.
And that's the same thing. It's just a bridge. So I wanted to make that point and to show that Laurel Canyon is vibrant in many aspects of artistry and, you know, creativity. And I just used that little video to bump it up a bit towards that angle.
And that's also one of the reasons why I wanted to start this podcast is to kind of bring exposure to people like yourself and people, all the talent that we're involved in our community, because it's there. And it's, I think just people need to be aware of what's happening, you know? And it's just such like a free feeling environment. It's just like, there's no judgment. There's no just like, let's just all jam and make
let's
some
have
music.
Fun.
Let's just have fun.
Just have a good time.
And
because everybody's playing banging on something, his tambourine going.
I mean, I'm not even a musician, and I get up and I
no,
like.
You've done. I've seen jam.
Jam on some bongos there.
Did you play that night?
I owe that to my dad. My dad's an excellent conga player.
I remember you telling
me that. I owe that to you, Dad. It's just like, I don't feel judged if I'm just like decide to like pick up, you know, an instrument.
I've always been one to be like, to like get the wing around, bring him up, like get on the mic, come on.
Well, your wife is a badass drummer.
Yeah, man, she's getting better.
She's fucking badass. I love seeing women up there playing with all your
I told
men.
Her, I said, you should get up because they're going to freak out.
She's so good. No, she's so awesome. What is something about yourself that people might be surprised to know?
I mean, I was like, yeah, in this rock band touring around, and all of a sudden they find out I used to design balloons that were the shape of Snoopy and Woodstock and, you know, like Superman and Spider-Man. I was like, it's not rock and roll, you know, but that's what I did. I came before I went to art school. I got a job as a designer for the special productions for Macy's in New York. And what it was we were building all the preparing and building all the stuff for the Macy's Day Parade all year long. And also we used to do the fireworks over the East River.
Wow.
Yeah. I used to go out and weld all the jibs and everything. And I'd be on the boats when they shot them. And, but yeah, I haphazardly, I was, you know, I graduated high school, 17. I was working in a shoe store. And my art teacher, who was like my favorite teacher in the school, and we used to be pals, he saw me. He's like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm selling shoes. He's like, I'm going to get you out of here. Over the summer, I work with Macy's and we do the East River fireworks show. They're looking for somebody. I'm going to give them a recommendation. You go see this guy. And I went in with my high school portfolio of all my drawings and everything, you know. And they hired me. And basically, I was, you know, 17. And they're like, all right, just go help these guys and do whatever they ask you to do kind of thing. And I was with a small crew of four people, and they all worked on the balloons. And they were like, okay, John, let's go grab this balloon. We'll bring it over here, and we'll show you how to set it up. And
you didn't know what you were doing at the time?
I got a job with them. I was like, what are we going to do here? But they put me with that department because they needed a guy to help.
Yeah.
And I was a young, strapping young kid, you know, ready to do anything. You know? Go over there, John, go over here. And then so I worked with these four people. And the one guy I worked with, his name was Scott McNeil. And he had been designing balloons. He's from Canada. And he did all the balloons for, like, the Pink Floyd, the world, the tour by Pink Floyd when they did all those balloons with the teacher and the pigs. And he did all that. And he had worked with another guy with that. And then he did stuff with Princess Diana for her birthday. And he was just a balloon guy, which was something I was like.
But that's a big balloon. I mean, that's a
top
of the line.
Yeah, that's why he had the job there.
Right.
But it was funny because I think he was like in his 30s or late 20s at the time. And I was 17. I thought he was so old. And I was like, wow, I used to know so much, you know. But one day we had our first job in-house, and I wasn't really in that department, but I went to see him because we became friends, Scott and I. And I saw he was making the sculpture and doing sort of getting it ready to make the model. And while I was in high school, I had taken a year of sewing and fashion making because I wanted to take a drawing class, but it got canceled. But I still wanted to go to that school because it was student school. Long story. But anyhow, I learned how to sew. And so I said something, man, I know how to sew and I know how to make patterns. So why don't you do it like this? And I took the model and I just did like a sketch of, hey, you can kind of, and he was like, you know how to do that? I go, yeah, I studied that in high school. I know how to do all that. He goes, you know how to sew? I go, yeah. I go, why? He goes, hold on. So he went to go see the boss and he told the boss, he goes, he knows how to sew and design. I'm going to ask him to work with me and I want him to help me. Because I gave him some idea that he didn't think of because he was doing everything by colors or whatever. And then I said, no, we can make it like by shape when you make fabric.
So you brought an idea to them.
And I got hired into that department.
Wow.
As a designer.
So you were there for like the big Thanksgiving, Macy's?
Oh, yeah.
Parade,
I was in charge of all,
or
of
all of them.
Yeah, all of them.
Was
I
that
went
really
around.
Cool?
Actually, yeah, it was great. I mean, I was 17 still, and I got hired for that. And I was designing. We had done like ones that were not flying yet. We had done the ones that were like for promotion. Like I did the Pink Panther for Valentine's Day. It was like with a cane and a heart.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
And we put it in front of the Macy's on the building. So I was like designing how to stay, keep it in the building and with the air going. And it make it stay up and safe and not fall on people. And like, and going up and like setting it up with cranes and like all these people in the street.
I imagine the adrenaline of like the day of a parade.
Oh,
like
no.
That, does that compare to like the what you feel performing on a stage?
It was a bit like that because I didn't even know about music then. I was just designing. So what happened was like the night before, we have all year round, I'll repair and prep the balloons for whatever they're going to be for. But when it came to the parade, we prepped everything and we set it up how we were going to set them up the night before because we'd inflate them.
Right.
And I would be in charge of a crew of like 30 people and a truck with helium and get an air.
Oh,
and I'd go from one to one and tell everybody what to do and where to start. No, don't do that. Now stop that. Now go in this side. Now fill this up because it'd have to be a certain way so it wouldn't like
fall. Right.
We have a net on it with sandbags and it gets really big. It could fly away if you don't have it netted down.
Oh my gosh.
So we do that all night until the morning. And in the morning, we wake up like after an hour of sleep and then fly them down the street. And I would be like, go this way. You like watch out for the trees and the poles.
It's just a rush. It's like a live show.
And you're going down the street and there's like millions of people. You know,
yeah,
have you seen the parade?
Of course. Oh,
millions
yeah.
on left to right and they're screaming at you and you're in charge of like 30 people. And they're all like
and
holding
like
ropes.
You're like 17 when you're doing this? 17, 18?
I started 17.
How cool.
And it by 8, well, yeah. And at 18, 19, I was flying around to wherever the Macy's were and setting them up. I was in charge. You know, I'd go there and be like 30 volunteers. They're like, oh my God, the Macy's. They never like were dying to see the balloon. They'd never
That's
seen
so
it.
So cool. Oh my God, I love that. Yeah.
It was
so
a very
cool.
odd job to do. And it was like, I didn't think of any of it at the moment because I just did it and I knew how to do it. But then later I was like, wow, that is really talking to Scott, I was like, it's kind of new. Nobody, how many people in the world
do
this?
Who does that? Like, who?
We didn't know anybody.
I worked on the balloons for the Macy's Day Parade.
Yeah, the one thing that I knew that it was kind of special is because I actually went to Norway to visit a friend, and I went to see two concerts. I went to see the Rolling Stones, the Steel Wheels tour, and David Bowie's, like, when he came back to do the Spiders from Mars thing. On the Steel Wheels, the Steel Wheels tour, they had all these balloons in the side of the stage, these gigantic, you know, the hookers and the dogs and all this stuff on the side, like these gigantic, and they would come up really big and come down.
Yeah.
And I was like, I know those guys because I met them. I knew they were doing it. I met them 2 years earlier. They came to us, see us, because they're like, nobody else does balloons. So they came to see us because, like, you guys do balloons. We do. We don't know anybody else. Oh, one day they came in, the guys from Rolling Stone tour.
That's
they came
so
to visit
cool.
us. So I went after the show, after like the thousands of people left this big field, and I like.
You're like, I know the balloon guy. I can
no,
get
no.
Back
I went. I went to the stage and I went to the guy cleaning up. I said, are the guys from, you know, the balloons? And they're like, oh yeah, you know them? I got you. So he went back and said, and they both came out and they were like, John? And I was like,
what are you
doing? I was like, yeah, two English guys. I was like, hey, and they're like, what are you doing?
That's so cool.
It was in Norway, like,
small
but it was a
world.
Very balloon world. Anyhow, that was my, from like 17 to the age of 21. And then I went to art school. I went to the School of Visual Arts and I studied fine art painting and acting.
Where do you think your passion for music came from?
That's a very good question. I think just, I would say now, probably in hindsight, it was just my desire to make something out of nothing, you know, because I went to art school and I was always, as a kid, making something out of nothing, getting the paper and the three colored markers and making a drawing of something. So I always had this passion, like, just kind of fly by night, make it and make it actually happen. There was a moment when I realized that I loved to be a painter and I did study to be a painter, but I felt very, like, alone a lot of times because I was, like, in my house painting, drinking coffee, smoking cigarettes, on the phone. Hey, come over and check out my painting. And then waiting to try to get a show. And it was, like, very lonely. It wasn't, like, mm-hmm. And when I played music with people, it was, like, art happening now between us, sharing.
Connecting.
Yeah, and I just thought, wow, I like that a lot. You know, it made me feel a different kind of energy. I loved painting. I love making art. But, you know, it's difficult to get people to understand what it is you're putting visually. And, you know, I did sell a lot of work and I did have a lot of group shows in New York and I was, you know, making some money selling my painting. I was starting to get there, but I went for music and everybody was like, what? You just graduated from art school? You know, like, what are you doing? You know, like, but I just found this connection to how music brought
people
together.
People.
And I felt like I had a knack for it in some way because I was getting good responses. Even though I just started and could only play like a few chords, people were like, wow, what's that? And I was like, eh, it's song I wrote, you know.
And it helps you get the ladies, I'm sure.
No.
No?
No,
yeah.
No, of
like,
course.
I'm this
yeah,
big,
you
explain,
why'd you get into rock
insane.
And roll, junk? Girls.
Yeah, girls.
No. Well, you know, hey, there's, you know, when you're younger and you're... I mean, you want attention. Any artist wants attention for what they do. And I felt it also as a way, because I had been doing poetry in New York. I'd go into, like, poetry readings, and I was kind of into that. I was, you know, New York art world.
Yeah.
And I realized that some part... I remember somebody said, wow, your poems are like song lyrics. I was like, oh, that's interesting. I never thought that. And I did, when I first started learning guitar, I took my poetry and I made it into songs. And I was like, oh, yeah, it does actually work. So there was like a little bit like a, yeah, I figured it was kind of a thing to do. And I've always wanted to kind of learn the guitar. Even when you see somebody play, you go, wow, how did he do that?
Mm-hmm.
I never knew a guitar player. I never knew artists. I never knew a musician. I didn't know where they came from. I thought they were on an island somewhere. And they like took them out for release every now and then. They came from like, you know, where Godzilla lives or something.
It just sounds like you're so driven just to create the life that you wanted. Just everything that you talked
about. I think
about.
That's part of it as well, yeah. I definitely took a lot of risks of, like, not knowing what was next. You know, and it has paid off, and then other times it didn't. It was really, like, I learned that that was a mistake to do some things, you know? And that's always, you know, that's life. But it's how you deal with that mistake. Do you, like, let it crush you, or do you now figure out the right way to do it and be humble, or just realize that it's a new thing now, you know? It's not that. So, you know, I mean, I wouldn't say that I have the answers to everything, but I definitely feel when I'm doing something right, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think you are doing fantastic.
Thank you, Rachel.
And yes. I'm excited about the release of your 20th anniversary album.
I know.
Is it going to come out in America? Or is
I don't know.
In Spain?
I mean, maybe you'll be able to buy it online. You could have it shipped to you, but the label is over in Spain. So, you know, they'll have, you could probably get online. You could order it and it'll mail it. It'll cost you more. Vinyl is very expensive when you do vinyl run. Could be like $25 per album or something, you know, it's like for a vinyl. But I think that album's worth it. It's such a cool album.
Are your previous albums available on iTunes to download?
Yeah, you could probably find, I know my solo album, it's weird though, because I made a deal with the last record company. I had a big fight with them because I didn't want them to have control of it in the rest of the world. So before the release, it was like a year of fighting with the label and the contract. It's on Spotify, but I'm not sure if you can listen it to the States. You might have to, like, I don't know, go to Canada. It's weird that I think they did a little block because I wasn't allowing them to sell it in the States, and I have all the rights. You can hear a lot of tracks of all my albums. And I do have a SoundCloud.
You have a lot of a SoundCloud and also YouTube. You have some videos on YouTube
as
well.
Tons of me just, like, jamming in my house.
I'm just saying for people to check
out your music. Yeah, if they look for my, put my name in, put the Nash after it, a bunch of stuff come out.
Thanks so much for coming on, John.
No, I loved it.
It was so fun to talk to you.
Such a great day to talk.
I know. Let's go jam.
Jam.